Religion of Freedom, a talk given by Venerable Dr. Tirthri Damananda Nayaka Thera at University of Kebangsaan, Malaysia.
Buddhism is a very liberal and gentle religion, which has given due credit to man's intelligence. In the Kalama Sutta, one of the discourses delivered by the Buddha, he has given a very liberal advice to a group of young people on how to accept a religion in a rational manner. These young people who could not decide on how to choose a proper religion came to see the Buddha to seek his advice. They told him that since different religious groups introduced religion in different ways, they were confused as they could not understand which method was correct. These young people, it would appear, were free thinkers or truth seekers. That was why they decided to discuss this matter with the Buddha. They requested him to give some guidelines to help them find a reasonable religion through which they could find truth. In reply to their question, the Buddha did not say that Buddhism was the only true religion. Instead, he gave some important advice for them to consider. The Buddha never encouraged people to accept a religion through mere faith, but he encouraged them to consider and understand things without bias. He also did not persuade people to use emotion and mere devotion based on blind faith to accept a religion. This is why Buddhism is known as a rational religion. It is also known as a religion of freedom and reason. There should be nothing for us to accept through faith or emotion in order to practice a religion. If we accept a religion to justify our need for desire or pleasure, then there will be no real religious value in such practices. Religion must be accepted through free choice. Each person must accept a religion with understanding and not because it is a law given by some authorities or supernatural powers. There must be a personal and rational conviction about the religion that is accepted. When we seriously consider the advice given by the Buddha, we can understand this very clearly. Many people have not yet learned to appreciate the freedom that is allowed in Buddhism. When we compare this freedom with other religions, we can understand the real meaning of religious freedom. Throughout our life, from our birth to death, the freedom that we experience according to this Buddhist attitude is remarkable. I doubt whether the followers of other religions also can enjoy the same freedom. I don't think that the followers of Buddhism themselves really understand the extent of the freedom that they experience in their day-to-day life. For example, according to at least one religion, there is a law that every child must be baptized according to its religious tradition. It is believed that otherwise the child would remain a sinner and it will be impossible for him to find salvation. But we cannot find such religious law in Buddhism. Usually, Buddhists bring their newborn children to the temple to perform some religious services and receive some blessings. Although it is not compulsory, this type of traditional practice is often practiced and is considered important to develop a Buddhist confidence and conviction in life. But the parents does this voluntarily. There is no Buddhist law which requires him to bring a child to the temple to be initiated as a Buddhist. When the time comes for marriage, there is no Buddhist law that requires every person to get married in a temple, because Buddhism does not regard marriage as a religious sacrament. Going through a marriage ceremony is a symbolic acceptance of a personal duty in a worldly way of life. When people get married and have children, it is because they are still attached to the world of sensual desire. To Buddhists, marriage is neither holy nor unholy. But man or woman is free to remain either as a bachelor or get married. Some people like to avoid marriage in order to escape disturbances associated with married life and to devote more time to serve others. Then again, others like to concentrate on spiritual development without being hampered by mental disturbances which arise through having to shoulder the responsibilities of marriage and parenthood. But in some religions, marriage is considered necessary unless one decides to take the vow of abstinence. They say that God has created man and woman to produce children, and that if they do not fulfill the will of God, they are going against His wish. Even after marriage, there is no religious law in Buddhism to say that a couple must produce children. But some religions say that since God gives children, people have to accept it. But this has created a very big problem in this world today, especially when it comes to population control. Buddhism also does not interfere with those who like to produce more children if they can afford to attend to and look after their children. Without allowing them to suffer, couples are at liberty to produce any number of children they want. Buddhism does not interfere with the freedom of a married couple to decide as to what they want to do. On the contrary, it gives all the necessary advice on how to maintain a happy family life. Buddhism does not condemn married life. In various discourses, the Buddha had, in fact, pointed out the duties and obligations that people have to fulfill in order to experience peace, happiness, and harmony in family. The Buddha also mentioned that if a man or woman can have an understanding partner and obedient children, he or she would be fortunate. Of course, those who like to renounce the worldly pleasures by realizing the commitments, responsibilities, and problems that they have to face can abstain from marriage, sexual relationships. Religion should not prevent the freedom people prefer in that kind of life, provided that it is done with understanding. A sexual relationship between man and woman is not regarded as an evil act in Buddhism. There is nothing inherently sinful about sex. It is merely another sensual pleasure that human beings indulge in who are not free from sensual desire. Those who are overly concerned with the pleasure of sex are said to suffer mental unrest, which hinder their progress towards ultimate happiness. In Buddhism, morality and self-respect are important. People have to experience this worldly pleasure in a respectable way so that one does not degrade oneself or one's partner. Those who violate this principle of respect for oneself are regarded as having committed wrong action, bad karma. In Buddhism, we believe that every person is innately good. For a Buddhist, there is no sin, only bad karma or unskillful action. This kind of karma prevents mental purification and thereby hinders the attainment of ultimate happiness. Even when we react through anger to another's wrongdoing, we are guilty of bad karma because it is a mental defilement. This is why Buddhists are patient when they are condemned. They realize that the doer of the wrong action is deluded because of ignorance. If he can be shown that his action is misguided, he can gain wisdom. It is mentioned in the Buddha's teaching that even the greatest enemy of the Buddha, Devadatta, would one day realize the bliss of emancipation by becoming a Paccheka Buddha. There is no eternal damnation in Buddhism. If we do good and avoid evil for the sake of just pleasing a God without developing compassion and understanding, we only abuse our own intelligence and develop selfishness. Regarding the problem of family planning, Buddhists are at liberty to take any precaution to avoid conception. According to Buddhism, for a life to originate in the mother's womb, all of a physical condition must be present. When any one of these conditions is not present, as when birth control is practiced, then a life is not formed. So, birth control is merely the removing of the conditions arising from which life can come into being. However, when all the conditions are present and life is created, at the moment of conception, it cannot be removed. Abortion is totally unacceptable to Buddhism. People may give various excuses to justify it according to their own convenience. They may claim that it is their personal effort, but it is nevertheless a violation of a universal or natural law, because no life that comes into being should be ended by another. The religious concept of death is another source of controversy. From the Buddhist point of view, death is the end of one existence and the beginning of another. So, death is not the end of a life. Life processes continue. In between birth and death, there is a mental link. Some people say that after their death, their bodies cannot cremate because it is against their religion. Then again, others say that they cannot bury the dead, but must be cremated according to their religion. At the same time, there is still another group which allows neither burial nor cremation. They keep the bodies of the dead in isolated places or on the top of pillars for vultures and other birds of prey to consume the flesh. In the Buddha's teaching, there is no restriction whatsoever regarding funeral rites. It is left to the discretion of the individual next of kin to perform funeral rites according to whatever way is convenient and sensible. It is obvious by this that all forms of superstitious, traditional, ritualistic practices are discouraged in Buddhism. For thousands of years, people have been arguing about funeral rites. Naturally, this has created so much unnecessary misunderstanding and upheaval. Buddhists do not face this problem. That means they can live and work and die in any part of the world and can perform any kinds of solemn religious funeral service or last rites according to their convenience or cultural practices without hurting the sensitivities of others. Many people spend a great deal of money and time worrying about their death. For example, they build enormous and elaborate tombs to house the remains of the departed one. This is due to the belief that the spirit had somehow remained within the coffin of the dead and that everything must be done to endure the physical comfort of these spirits. Then, Some people go to great lengths in burying their dead departed next to or alongside each other because the departed ones had been close to each other when they were alive. According to Buddhism, when people remember their dead, it is because of the gratitude they feel for their loved ones who had given them so much help and assistance when they were alive. The ceremonies they perform are merely to reflect this mental sense of gratitude. Therefore, Buddhism should not be unduly concerned with the physical remains of the dead. Rather, they should respect the dead by following the example set by them when they were alive by thinking well of them. But you should not hold such superstitious belief and think that the spirit of the dead one will remain in the grave until one day when they will go to heaven or to hell when the call comes to rise from the grave. Paying respect at the graveyard to the remains of the departed ones also gives emotional satisfaction to the living. But the continuity of the life and mental process proceeding immediately after death and existence thereafter will take place again according to the karmic force of the departed. Buddhists are even free from having to worry about what will happen to them after death. Some other people believe that they will be sent either to hell or to heaven and that they have no other choice. Certain religious groups instill fear in people's minds and threaten them by describing hellfire, or they create temptation by exaggerating the pleasures of paradise. By introducing such belief, they hope to advance their particular interests. Buddhists do not adopt such methods to propagate Buddhism. Then, again, some religions claim that existence again after death is not limited only to heaven or hell, but that there are many other forms of existence into which rebirth can take place, such as humans, animals, devas, ghosts or spirits, and some other kinds of living beings in many parts of the universe, either visible or invisible. Some others say that nothing remains for another existence and try to prove this by saying that people who have departed from this world are never heard of again. That means there is no evidence to prove that there will be another life hereafter. According to them, death is the end of everything and we should not be bothered about our next life. Because there is nothing beyond. Actually, all these various beliefs had been discussed even during the Buddha's time. What was the Buddha's attitude regarding this controversial issue? The Buddha never thought that this present existence on earth is the only life, and existence hereafter take place only either in heaven or hell. The belief in an eternal heaven or hell is also not acceptable to Buddhism because it is not practical or reasonable to have eternal reward or eternal punishment either in paradise or in hell for actions created during a single lifetime or less than 100 years. Remember that 100 years is incredibly short time when compared to eternity. The Buddhist attitude is that we should not crave and develop too much attachment toward the next life, because such a mental attitude can prolong our existence in this cycle of birth and death and cause us to suffer more. If we crave too much for an eternal life and we direct our concentration towards it, our mind gets preoccupied with the future. The Buddhist should not worry unduly about the past or the future. He should concentrate of mind with no worries and stay constantly at peace with himself in the present. We must do our duty and behave as harmless and understanding human beings. If we can do this, there is nothing for us to worry about our future existence. Since rebirth is a continuing process, existence cannot be considered miserable, but actually become favorable. If there is no rebirth, there will be nothing for us to regret. If we do good and avoid evil merely to ensure a better next life, we are selfish. We must try to fulfill our duties as human beings who work for the welfare of others without any thought of personal benefit to ourselves as a reward. Our idea should be not to please either God or Buddha, but to maintain our happiness in the knowledge that we have not caused misery to others and that we need nothing for ourselves. As human beings, we can understand the nature of good and bad from experience, but some religions impose laws on man, commanding him to do certain actions by calling them commandments given by a god. Followers of these religions refrain from bad deeds and do good just to obey the law given, so as to avoid punishment or to gain a reward. Modern anthropologists have discovered many things to prove that human beings have existed on this earth as civilized living beings even 100,000 years ago. When we consider that even the oldest religious law or commandments were introduced to us only a few thousand years ago, we can ask ourselves how men have lived as civilized human beings without having received such divine message even before religion was invented. Is it not due to man's innate understanding of his nature of existence? Man commits evil deeds, but he knows instinctively that it is wrong. That is why he commits them secretly and hides after doing such bad deeds. His craving and selfish idea persuade him to commit them. Good begets good and bad begets bad. This is a natural law, and people have known this even before religious laws were introduced. This truth was not created by anybody. This is simply the nature of action and reaction, cause and effect. Whether we have a religion or not, whether we believe it or not, each person experiences this in his day-to-day life. This understanding of the nature phenomena can develop in the mind when it is free from religious dogma. To understand right and wrong, people must use the free mind by using human intelligence without depending on anybody. The idea of doing good based on punishment and reward from a God is selfish. This attitude is suitable only for those who cannot appreciate the nature of good and bad. Adults must understand the nature of good and bad by considering the suffering that they have created through their wrongdoing and the services that they can experience give them knowledge, the resulting happiness and peace of mind that they attain through good deeds is more important than that of any other material gain. It must also be emphasized that one must not crave for pleasure when doing good either. If you do good with selfishness, we will be disappointed because the reward that we expect may not measure up to our expectations. We must maintain an absolute balance of the mind without craving for any kind of reward. Only then can perfect peace of mind be attained. The Buddha had explained how to gain this absolute happiness without developing selfishness in our mind. The Buddha's advice, as mentioned in the Kalam Sutta, is not to accept anything based upon mere report, tradition, or hearsay. Usually, people develop faith after listening to others. They unthinkingly accept what others say about their religion or what is recorded in their religious book. Most people very seldom take the trouble to investigate or to find out whether what has been said is true or not. This general attitude is hard to understand, especially in these modern times when the scientific education teaches people never to accept anything which cannot be explained rationally. Even then, today, some of those so-called educated youth use only their emotions or devotion without using their sense of reason. People can write anything about their religion by exaggerating various incidents in order to influence others. Later, they can introduce them as divine messengers to further develop faith or confidence. But we have to read these writings analytically by using our common sense and power of reason. That is why the Buddha advised us not to accept anything hastily, which is reported, whether it is traditional or mere hearsay. People practice certain traditions which are based on belief, custom, or the way of life of the community to which they belong. However, certain traditions are very important and significant. Therefore, the Buddha did not condemn them, but advised us to consider very carefully whether those practices are meaningful or not. We also can understand that certain traditions are out of date and meaningless. This could be because many of them were introduced and practiced by primitive people, and their understanding about human life and the nature was very limited at that time. So, today, when we use our modern scientific education and knowledge of the universe, we can see the nature of their belief. The belief that primitive people had about the sun, moon, and the star, the globe, the wind, thunder, and lightning, rain, and earthquake were based on their attempt to explain these seemingly terrifying phenomena. They introduced them as God, or act of God, or some supernatural power. With our advanced knowledge, today we know these phenomena for what they really are. That is why the Buddha said, don't accept what you hear at once. Don't try to justify your irrational behavior by saying that these are our traditions and we are bound to accept them. Everybody likes to listen to stories. Perhaps that is why people believe in hearsay. Assume that 100 people have seen a particular incident, and when each person repeats this incident to others, he will relate it in a different way by adding many more things and exaggerating the details. He will add more salt and spice to make it more tasty and interesting and to beautify. Generally, human nature is such that each person will tell the story as if he is the only one who can tell the other of what has really happened. That is the nature of the story that people create and spread. When you read certain stories in any religion, please remember that most of those interpretations are just to decorate a minor incident to attract people. Otherwise, there will be nothing for them to tell others and no one will pay any attention to them. However, stories are very useful. There are some moral lessons to be gained in many of those stories. So, don't accept anything simply because you heard them from others. People may talk about many kinds of miracles, gods and goddesses, angels, and their powers according to their belief. Most people in this world may accept them at once without any investigation. According to the Buddha, it is not advisable to believe anything at once, because the majority of people in this world are still in the dark, and their understanding the priority of the truth is poor. Only very few people can understand things properly. Next, the Buddha warned us not to believe anything merely upon the authority of religious texts or holy books. People always say that all these messages found in their holy books were conveyed directly by their God. Today, they try to introduce those books as messages from a heaven. It is difficult to believe that they received this message from heaven and had recorded it in their holy book only a few thousand years ago. Why were these revelations not made early, considering that the planet Earth is a few million years old? Why were they made only to certain favored individuals? Surely it would have been much more effective to assemble a whole lot of people in one place and reveal the truth to multitudes rather than depend on one man to do the job. Buddhists do not try to introduce the teachings of the Buddha as a divine message, and they preach without using any mystical power. According to the Buddha, we should not accept even his teaching as recorded in the Buddhist books blindly and without proper understanding. This is the remarkable freedom that Buddha had given us. Although he never claimed that Buddhists are the chosen people of God, he gave far greater credit for man's intelligence than any other religion has done. The best method for a rational person to do is to consider carefully before he accepts or rejects anything. Study, think, and investigate until you realize what it is. If you accept by depending solely on authorities or holy books, you will never realize the truth for yourself. Not to depend upon your reasoning and argument alone is another advice of the Buddha. Do not think that your powers of reasoning are absolute. Otherwise, you will become proud and will not listen to others who know more than you. Normally, we advise people to use their sense of reasoning. Yes, by using their limited senses and mind, people reason things for themselves. Even children and uneducated people use their reasoning power according to their age, maturity, education, and understanding. But these reasoning powers differ from person to person according to their maturity, knowledge, and experience. Again, this kind of reasoning is also subject to change from time to time. People's capacity indefinitely or their recognitions of changes also change from time to time. In such reasoning, there is no final analysis or ultimate truth. Since we have no other choice, we have to use our extremely limited senses of reason for the time being, until we gain proper understanding. Our aim should be to constantly develop our mind by being prepared to learn from others without giving into blind faith. The Buddha went to every teacher he could find before he gained final enlightenment. Even then, he did not accept everything that they taught. Instead, he used his own reason to understand the truth. This is the reason why the Buddha advised us not to take things for granted through mere reasoning.
Now let us consider argument or logic. Whatever we think that certain things are acceptable to us, we say they are logical. Actually, the art of logic is a valuable tool for argument. Logic can be exploited by talented orators who use intelligence and cunningness. One who knows how to talk can topple the truth and justice and defeat others. Lawyers argue in the court. Different religious groups argue to prove that their religion is better than the other religions. Their arguments are based on their talents and ability to express their ideas, but not necessarily on the truth. This is the nature of argument, to arrive at the truth.